Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of It's Easy, Son, your life lessons on your journey to your purpose. And this is our second, I guess, visual podcast. Edwin Moses was the first, and it stands to reason that Coach Andrew Price is with me today. I call him Coach, but I've been watching him now since I was a youngster, an outstanding soccer player, an outstanding gentleman, outstanding coach, outstanding sports connoisseur. I've yet to meet one thing that I've not heard a topic come up that he does not have an opinion on or a history about. So today should be a very, very good conversation for someone that I've watched from a distance. We went to two different high schools, but they're on the same street. And in Jamaican parlance, we'll say North Street or North Street.
Yes, so sir, I
have my brother here with me today, and it's going to be a fun interview. And without any further ado, I welcome to the podcast this week, Coach Andrew Price. Coach Price, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Gerald, for inviting me to come on your podcast. When you have somebody as illustrious as Edwin Moses preceding you, it's definitely an honor to share the same platform as a man of his great distinction.
Well, Coach, I'm not gonna let you get away. You're doing some awesome things. So you on this platform, and you are bringing some gravitas to this show. I can tell you that when this gets to Jamaica, a lot of people are going to know a lot more about Andrew Price, but more importantly, the man and what you're about and the great things that you're doing for young people in Jamaica. So let's get started. What I do is ask open-ended questions, and from those open-ended questions, your responses will give me additional questions. And before you know it, the hour will be over. So with that, let's just jump in. Who is Andrew Price? Early years, family, his grounding, and what drives him today?
Well, Andrew Price comes from a small family. My mom and my pop raised me in a middle-class community in St. Andrew. I attended school at Alpha Kinder Prep. My parents were deep religious people. So my mother is Anglican, and my father, who is now deceased, was Catholic, fearing individuals of my brother. So I was heavily involved in the training. Alpha Kinder, got involved in football and started to play the Alberga Cup, which constitutes the prep school football competition in Jamaica. And I can say from there, the rest is history. I just fell in love with the sport, enjoyed it at a very young age. I started playing at about age 8, and I continued to matriculate throughout my prep school period until I attended St. George's College, getting a common entrance scholarship to St. George's College. The right side of North Street, if I may say so. But at St. George's College, they had players prior to me entering the school that made me want to emulate them. And I think that's one of the reasons why I decided to go to St. George's College. Back in the days, you had two choices in deciding where you want to go to school. My first choice was St. George's College, and my second choice was Campion. Now, Campion isn't too big on sports, so I really wanted to go to St. George's College. So I attended St. George's College. And while there, I started in first form with a group of individuals who I was meeting for the first time in my life. Because as you know, when you go to high school, you meet people from different walks of life, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different races, different classes. And when I started to play Pepsi football, which is under 13 football in first form, I met a band of brothers, and that's what I'll call them, a band of brothers who, for the next 7 years of my high school life, would become my comrade in arms. We won Pepsi in first form. We then graduated from there and played Colts football, and we won Colts football twice back-to-back, 1980 and 1981. Right. The same group of players went on to be two-time triple champions back-to-back. And it just shows the cohesiveness, the unity, and the camaraderie that we had from first form throughout our entire school life. We lived together, we ate together, you know, we went out together, we partied together. You know, it was just a brotherhood that I have never felt in my entire life. And what I got out of my high school experience, I will never, never regret. Okay. And to this day, we still keep in close contact and we are still close friends.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting you say that, because one of your teammates is someone I've known since I was about 4 or 5 years old, Christopher Chipper Morgan. We grew up together in Edgewater in Portmore. And when I was going into high school, it was my choices. My first choice was Kingston College and my second choice was St. George's College. But my dad went to KC and my brother went to KC. So I say I end up on the right side.
Yes.
I want to take you back a little bit.
Sure.
Talk about your family and your mom and your dad and your faith tradition. And I know we'll get to it a little bit further. But what was the Price household like? A mother and father who are faith, grounded in their faith, the discipline, because you exhibit discipline to do what you do at a level that, you know, requires a foundation and a grounding. Can you talk to us a little bit about that, your early years in the home? What was that like spiritually and in a family atmosphere?
Definitely, Gerald. It was a very spiritual home. My parents, like I said, were religious, but they were not fanatics. And I believe that people can be worshippers of the Lord and at the same time not be fanatics. Like, you can't play football, you can't go there, you can't go visit a friend. They were not parents like that. They allowed us the opportunity to explore, to find out, and make the right choices in life. So, you know, they didn't have a tight grip on you, but they had still, at some point, they'd have to reel you in if they thought you were getting away. And that's the type of parents. And I'm happy my parents gave me that foundation, because I possibly would not be the man I am today without their involvement in my life. And, you know, they gave us all the opportunities. If I wanted to play football, they'd buy me a football boots. If I wanted to play cricket, they'd buy me a cricket bat. They were the type of parents that wanted their children to be happy and do the things that they like. And I think they encouraged me in my sporting activities. And for that, I'm very happy. And I do the same thing now with not only my kids, but other individuals' kids.
So Coach, as I'm listening to you, you know, it's everything is coming full circle. Because when we get to what you do now, I think it will tie it all together. But that foundation with your family and going into the atmosphere you had at St. George's, you know, prep school and everything, and into St. George's, this whole concept of family, extended family, immediate family, what does the word family mean to you? Because as I look at what you do now as a coach, an administrator, and a mentor, everything you do seem to come back to this concept of family. Is that an accurate observation, or is that just me tying?
Very accurate. Very accurate, Gerald. Family is very important, you know. And, you know, they said a village raise a child. And that's how I look at life. If you can help a brother, then you try and help them. Are we our brother's keepers? I always ask myself that. And I would put myself in the position of the other person. Would you want to do that? Would you want to experience that? And then that's how I would relate to the other person. And family is very important. You know, the bonds that tie are the ones that are so sacred. Sometimes when one of us get weak, the other one is going to be stronger and help pull you along. So the whole concept of family was very important. And I learned that not only at home, but I learned it at school at St. George's College, among my peers, along my teammates. You know, it's all for one for all. All that is a part of that family concept that I have carried through my entire life.
Now, Thank you for that, Coach. Now, something I have to ask you, which I ask almost every guest, when you think about that family concept and what you just said, when you look at the young people and the lives that you try to impact today, most of them coming from homes that don't have that. So how do you, as a coach or mentor or advocate for these young people, get them to experience that? Because you have a lot of influence on young people. How do you do that?
Well, what I do, I try to give them the experiences that I had as a child. A lot of them don't have a father figure. And that, I think, is the single most thing in Jamaica that is not where it should be. Too many households are led by mothers. And you need a father figure in any household to help mold and develop young men. And that's what we don't have in this country. Now, what I do in my work, social work at Boys Town, where I coach youngsters, I treat them like a father that they never had. A man never normally shows love to another kid because he doesn't know what it is about. He doesn't know how to do it. He doesn't know how to express himself. And the kid themselves don't know how to express themselves either because they have never been shown that type of love from another man within his household. So what you try to do, you try to let them understand that they are worthy and they can make something of themselves if they put their heart and soul into it. And you make them feel motivated. You empower them. You let them know they can be all they can be. And that's how I deal with a lot of the kids that I coach down at Boys Town. I let them know that despite your surroundings and despite your environment, if you have a fix it to your purpose, you can achieve anything your mind can conceive.
That is very powerful. So Coach, let's go a little further with your journey. So you left St. George's and you went to the States. Tell us what happens after you leave St. George's. What happened with Coach Price after that?
Well, okay. After being triple champions in 1984, a scholarship came along for me to St. Thomas University. Now, we wanted to three-peat, which is to win three Manning Cups in consecutive years. And I had the age to stay back and do another year of school. But God bless Dennis Zede. He looked at me and said, Andrew, when opportunities come, you must take it. And Chris Zede, one of my teammates and Mr. Zede's son, we both got scholarships the same year, took the scholarships because that anything could happen during the comet, anything could happen and you would be able to take them. And so I left in Miami to start a four-year scholarship at the university.
And what was that experience like? Was it one that you cherish? Was it as rewarding as St. George's, say?
Yes, it was. St. Thomas University was actually a Catholic college. It is based on the saints, St. Thomas of Villanova. So basically, the school had a Catholic background. So it was very similar to St. George's College. So, you know, the background was very good. And also, our soccer team, as you know, in the United States, we call it soccer, in Jamaica, football. But our soccer team had a lot of Jamaicans on the team. People like Richard Strawn, my teammate at St. George's College, he also started the same year that I got there. There was also Richard Bumpy Henlon, who used to play for Calabar. He also went to the school, and several other Jamaicans. When I look on our photos, I looked at that team. We were the Sunshine State champions in 1985. We had about seven Jamaicans on the team. And it gave me that feeling of family. So though I was away from home, I was in 305, and I felt like I was still in Kingston because you had so much Jamaicans around. It made you feel comfortable. So my adjusting to college life was pretty easy because I felt very comfortable, didn't feel ostracized. And like that word that I commonly use, family, was there, and I considered my teammates family.
Yeah. Now, one of the topics I like following, and every time this post comes up on our little group Ball Talk on Facebook, and we talk about student athletes, there's always this conversation back and forth, back and forth. What is your philosophy on that expression, student athlete? Because you definitely were a student athlete. You excelled at high school, you excelled at prep school, but you were academically prepared to go to the States. So when you hear the term student athlete, what does that mean to you?
Student athlete means an individual who wants to be educated, but in getting his education, can excel at a sport of his choice. That's what I call a student athlete. And I believe that many are capable of doing it. I knew that once I got that scholarship, though I love the sport, at the end of the day, there's going to come a day when I'll have to get into the real world, whether by injury, whether by not being able to become a professional, whether out of choice or forced, I will have to put down my football boots and get into the real world and make something of my life. So it was important that I got myself educated. So after football, there must be another life. So education was very important. And I tell you something, I was at St. Thomas University for 2 years. Like I said, we were the Sunshine State Conference champions my first year. The second year, we weren't doing so well. And they wanted to cull the soccer program because they weren't focusing on that. Now, the good thing about it is that we played against FIU, which is also another college within the state, on a regular basis. And during those 2 years, I impressed the coach at FIU, Carl Kremser, and a lot of Jamaicans also played for FIU. So they encouraged me when they heard the problems at St. Thomas University to come over to FIU. So I transferred in my junior year to FIU, and that is where I completed my degree. But I also had to look at where the program was going at St. Thomas University. And it wasn't going anywhere fast. And FIU provided an opportunity. It had another family that I engaged in because we had another team that had about 8 Jamaicans on the team. People like Alvin James, people like Robin Fraser, former national player for the United States soccer team, were among those people that were on the team. Mark Murray, several Jamaicans, Nick Weiss, and I could go on and on, that were Jamaican or from Jamaican parentage that was on that FIU team. So again, I was lucky to fall and drop into a family environment. And to this day, a lot of those college players that I played with at FIU are still my good friends, and we still keep in good contact.
So I'm going to keep pressing this theme of family because I now understand why Andrew Price is Andrew Price. At least I think so. So let's keep going and we'll get to that. But
sure.
So what happened after FIU? You graduate, you did what every student athlete is supposed to do. You graduate, you got that degree, you got the education. What was next?
Next is, I think, stepped in my patriotism. I've always been very patriotic, Gerald. And I knew that I came to the States to get an education. And after the education, I wanted to go back and be a good model citizen in Jamaica and contribute to the development of my country. My parents and my family came up for my graduation one weekend. The graduation was on a Monday. Graduation took place Monday night. Tuesday morning, I asked them for the house keys because I already booked my flight to go back to Jamaica, and I left them in Miami to vacation while I went back. And I've never looked back. I've always wanted to contribute to Jamaicans and the society there. And I went back, armed with my degree, got a job, you know, went back to my old club, Boys Town, started to play for them, started to coach, started to become a member of their executive where I was assistant treasurer, assistant secretary, got involved with administration. Football has been so good to me in all my years, Gerald. It was important for me to give back. And I looked at choosing Boys Town as the club that I wanted to give back. You know, I didn't get paid. I haven't gotten paid. I didn't want any pay. I want to help people. I want to help people realize that they can be all they can be. And that's one of the reasons why I chose Boys Town of all the club communities to go to see if I can help the people in Trenchtown. And it has been a revelation for me. It has been exhilarating. I've enjoyed it. I feel blessed when I look at several youngsters that when they started out, they had nothing. I see a lot of them, some have gotten scholarships, some have gotten professional contracts, some work now, have a car, own a home. And those are the things that please me. And money can't quantify the excitement I have when I see individuals who thought their life were hopeless get an opportunity to be who they can be. And that's why I enjoy it, and that's why I continue to do it.
So we had Donovan White on about a month ago, and he's over at Waterhouse. Yes. And he expressed the same sentiments about football and the community. When you think about Boys Town and the history of Boys Town, the football, the cricket, its founding, because, you know, you're a big sports fan. I don't know a sport in Jamaica that we grew up that you don't know the history, the stars, the legends, or yet you never ever once attend some sort of game. Is that tied it? Once again, I'm coming back to family. That is the foundation. But when you got to Boys Town and you saw what was there, how did that shape you further into, because you've been doing it a long time now. A lot of people have passed through Andrew Price's privilege and training. When you got there, aside from just being patriotic and wanted to help, what did you really have to do?
Well, I think the genesis starts, if I can tell you how I got down to Boys Town. I was home one summer, and a friend of mine, Michael Betty Walker, said to me and Chris, you guys need to get yourself in some condition for the new college season that's coming up. All you're doing is going out every night, partying and drinking and carousing. And, you know, you're not in any shape. And when you get back, you know, you're not going to be able to give up your best. So I'm going to find some training for you guys. So I said, all right. So he said he's going to carry us to play football somewhere. So we jumped in the car, got our football boots, got ready, got on our gears, and we started to make this trek down Spanish Town. I've never been down to that side of the world. I'll be the first to tell you that. Chris has never been down there. And when I saw Betty driving, I said, where's Betty going? I said, hold on there. But this looks like Maypen Cemetery. Then I see him take a left and go up Maypen Cemetery, from Maypen Cemetery, and then make a right into this place. When he made the right, the amount of young kids, and this is what stood out for me, the amount of young kids I saw running around, I was amazed. I was in awe. I stayed in the car for about 10 minutes. I didn't come out. Carl Brown came to the car and said to me, the CF down here now. There are good people that live down here. Come out to the car, man. And I came out of the car, and it was like Saul on the road to Damascus.
Wow.
That is what it felt like when I came out of that car, went down there, some kids taking my boots out of my hand and said, I'll carry it for you, sir. I'll carry it for you. And from that day, I fell in love with that club, and it has been a history of love, passion, sacrifice. There have been a lot of sorrows, but guess what? The work that I have done and the fulfillment that I've gotten about being associated with Boys Town is something that I will never, never, never regret. And I am happy the day Betty Walker. Betty, I'll tell you publicly, thank you for carrying me down to Boys Town, because it started a lifelong association with that club that I have never been able to regret.
You know, Coach, when I hear when I hear people like yourself and others on this podcast speak about that moment when something clicked for them, it basically became transformational. And I tell you, today, someone sent me an article. One of your proteges or one of the people that you are so proud of is Bonnie Shaw.
Yes.
She's got an award, I guess, last night or the night before last in the league she's playing in. And I said to myself, wow, how interesting this is to come up today. And I'm talking to Coach Price. So let's talk a little bit about your work coaching at the national level and the reggae girls and what that means to you. How did that come about? And why are you so passionate about it? Is it just an extension of this familial thing to Andrew Price?
You know, Gerald, I think fate has a, there's something about fate in life. A lot of things that have happened in my life have taken place because of fate. I remember Captain Horace Burrell called me on the phone once that I was the coach of Boys Town at the time. And he said, Andrew, we have this beach football project going on and we have a CONCACAF qualifiers. The JFF doesn't have any money and I don't have any money to give you, but I want you to coach the national beach football team. And as patriotic as I am, I said, Captain, no problem. I'll do it. And I got into beach football. Different type of sport, but still had the fundamentals of soccer. And when I got into the beach soccer, I was able to start working out with some individuals who have become some of my lifelong friends, even though they were my players, because of the closeness we had and how often we had to get together to prepare for tournaments. So during that period of time, we started off getting hammered. Every 2 years you have the tournament, and then we start to progress because the guys start playing together for a longer period of time. And our best showing was the last two tournaments where we got to the quarterfinals. And, you know, we were defeated by the United States, who eventually went on to the finals. So we have progressed through that period of time. Now, after Captain Burrell died, the then JFF president, Mike Ricketts, decided to start a women's football program again because it was defunct. The senior women's program was defunct at the time because the federation had taken a conscious decision not to participate in senior women's football. So President Ricketts decided to return into senior women's football. Prior to that, Jamaica got invited to the Youth Commonwealth Games, which was held in Nassau, Bahamas. As you know, Bahamas is one of the bigger teams in beach soccer throughout the world, and they have hosted the Beach Soccer World Cup in addition to the CONCACAF Championships. So they wanted Jamaica to enter a women's football team. So I got a list of about 12 young ladies from high schools across Jamaica to prepare them within 3 weeks to participate in the tournament in Nassau. And we went there and we prepared for the 3 weeks. These girls have never played beach football. They don't even know what it is. I had to teach them the rules of the game, what they had to do, what they couldn't do. And for 3 weeks, we were out at Port Royal practicing, getting prepared. Well, the story ends with us winning the silver medal at the Commonwealth Youth Games in Nassau, Bahamas. After which, the chairman of the Women's Football Committee in Jamaica, Elaine Walker-Brown, said to Mike Ricketts, the president, we need to get Andrew Price involved in women's football in Jamaica. So the president Ricketts said, well, Andrew coaches men, he coaches men. He said, no, the relationship I see that he has with these young ladies is what we need in our football today, that father figure. And then I was approached by President Ricketts to become a part of the coaching staff, which involved you, Menzies, Lauren Donaldson, and Hubert Busby, to chart the course for the World Cup qualifiers for 2019. And I became a part of the program. We started the program by starting back football in Jamaica, where we called up 40 young ladies locally. And we played in a challenge trophy in the CFU, where we had people like Cuba, Barbados participating, and we came second in that. From that trophy, we were able to select the best local players, about three or four local players, including the goalkeeper, Chrisanne Chambers, who was the captain of the team. And we blended them with several overseas-based players who went to college in the United States and came up with a cohort of senior national women's team. We started our first qualifiers in Haiti, where only one team came out. It was a 14 tournament. We went into the tournament under hostile conditions. You know, Haiti is not the most pleasant place to prepare for football. And when we went in there, Gerald, we won our first four matches handsomely. So did Haiti. At the end of the first three games, as fate would have it, the last game was against Haiti. Both of us were tied on the same amount of points, but we had an advantage of a goal difference advantage over them. So going to that final game on that Sunday in May in Haiti, in front of 35,000 vociferous Haitians, I mean, when our national anthem was being played, you could hear a pin drop because it was so silent. Once the national anthem started to play, the place started. Haiti took a 2-0 lead in the first 20 minutes of the game. And I think we were shell-shocked because of the crowd and how the crowd reacted after they scored. And we scored a goal just before halftime to cut the deficit by one goal. So we went in 2-1 down. The coaching staff went inside the changing room and said to the girls, don't panic. Just go outside, play a natural game, shut out the crowd, and just do the things that have gotten us here. But in the second half, Bunny scored an amazing free kick to make the game 2-2. We battled, we fought, we really dug in for the remainder of the half and end up tying the game 2-2. And we qualified based on goal difference. When the final whistle was blown, silence that was in that stadium was uncanny. And the only thing that broke it was when the girls went out into the middle of the field and started to clap the Haitian crowd, and they in return started to clap them. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing to see the Haitian, despite the fact that they had lost their opportunity to continue their quest to qualify for the 2019 World Cup, were actually applauding the young ladies for the performance that they put out there. After the game, they went to the changing room, and without being edged on by anybody, just started singing the national anthem and dancing. And it's something that I said to myself, coaches, this team is a resilient team. We can make it to the World Cup. And as fate would have it, we qualified for the World Cup for 2019, the first Caribbean team to have qualified for the World Cup.
Yeah. You know, coach, as I listen to the story and I'm looking at you, I see the pride just bubbling in your face, you know. But I will ask you a question, because I've always wondered this. This podcast is about inspiring young people, and you have been doing that now for a very, very long time. When you look at the experiences you have had with Boys Town, the Reggae Girls, you know, you coming up St. George's, St. Thomas, FIU, the whole nine yards. What do you think is lacking today in terms of, or is it lacking, that more young people don't get these experiences that you're talking about? Is it that we are not creating the structures for them to experience it, or are we just taking a select few, work with that few, and just forget about the rest? I see it happen so often, but I don't know how you break that cycle. I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
It's self-esteem. We have to start letting our children and the younger generation understand that they should have self-esteem. Some of them are told that they are not good enough.
Wow.
Some of them are told you're too ugly. Some of them are told you're too black. Some of them are told you're too skinny. Some of them are told you're too fat. We need to create youngsters who have self-esteem, who believe that they can do the best that they can and take the opportunities that are given to them. I'll give you a story very quickly. One of my greatest inspirations has been what has happened to Shamar Nicholson.
Yeah.
Shamar Nicholson lost his father at age 13 to gun violence in Trenchtown. Shamar's first reaction is to get even, think about revenge, get back at the people who got his father. And I heard that he had stopped training with the junior team for a period of time because he was so distraught that he wasn't interested in football. And I said to one of the younger players, go and tell Shamar that I want to speak to him. The day I told him that, he didn't come. I said to the player again, tell Shamar, I still need to speak to him. And he came to me and I said to him, look, I know a lot is on your mind. That changed. And I sat there and I spoke to him. He wasn't even looking at me. And I remember I held on his hand and I said to him, football can change your life. You have talent. And it's so funny. I was talking to him 3 weeks ago after a game which he scored in the Belgian Premier League. And I said to him, you remember that conversation we had? He says, coach, to this day, whenever I think about that conversation, I get goosebumps.
Wow.
To look at where I am now and where I could have been. And these are the things that motivate me. And we have to start empowering our kids to let them know they can be much better than they are told. And that's one of the things I try to push to the youngsters. You don't have to live above crossroads. You don't have to live in Beverly Hills. You don't have to come from Hollywood to be somebody in life. All you have to do is be the best that you can be. And if you try just to be the best that you can be, you will be successful at whatever you want. How many prime ministers, how many politicians, how many doctors, how many lawyers, how many engineers, how many road scholars have come out of inner city communities? Many. It's possible. Similar in the United States, many of them come out of the projects. It's possible.
Yeah.
But you have to have that mindset. You have to have that support base. And that word that I'll always refer to, family. Oh. You have to have a family that means the best for you and wants the best for you and empowers you to be the best that you can be.
Yeah. Now, coach, that is very powerful. I think when I tell you that this episode of the podcast, because quiet as it's kept, this podcast is starting to go international, so which I find crazy because I'm an accountant. You know, I don't know anything about, I'm not a journalist. I'm not a radio personality. I just wrote a book and I'm trying to convey it. But what you just said pertains to Jamaica, Trinidad. We had Shaka Hislop on and he told us about some of the same issues. But as I'm sitting here just thinking through all of it, and this might be putting you on the spot, but with your level of passion, experience, and gravitas with the young people, what is next for you in terms of the impact you want to have on Jamaica? I see your posts, I see your comments. You know, you're a big Arsenal fan, and I laugh all the time because you say "woo" and you're laughing, and you know it's. But
Tottenham play it.
I don't know. I don't speak about that too much publicly. But
yeah, I understand. Yes, okay. I wouldn't either.
But on a serious note, when you look at the topics that we talk about in Ball Talk, or I see you posting, and you're always lifting up things that are bigger than sports, and you're always encouraging all Jamaicans to think more than themselves. So for me, it has always been Coach Price has something here that's more than just football or cricket or sport in general. So what is next for Andrew Price?
Well, Gerald, to be quite honest with you, I'm going to spend the rest of my life helping people. That's my job. My job for the rest of my life is to help people who are not as fortunate as I am, who are not as fortunate as the masses, to be who they can be. And I'm going to do that through the vehicle of football. It may not necessarily be football, but I'm going to do it through that vehicle because that's the vehicle that I know. So I'm basically going to try and help youngsters, whether female, whether male. Once you love the sport, you want to make a life out of the sport, I'm willing to help in whatever form I can.
Well, you know, one of the things, Coach, that I always think about when I interview individuals who are accomplished as you are and understand what they have done and what they have accomplished, the question becomes remaining humble. But when you're humble and you don't really want the fanfare and all that kind of stuff, you don't necessarily get the recognition that you should. So in the last couple of moments that we have today, I always challenge my guests to share something that's inspirational with the audience. So I'll just leave it open-ended for you in terms of what you're seeing in Jamaica today, what is down the pike for Andrew Price. If you could share with us some words of inspiration and hope, what would that be?
My hope is that we would show more love to our brothers and sisters. There's not enough love in this world. We are too selfish. Everybody's just thinking about their own selves and what they're doing. I mean, even during COVID, we're not acting disciplined enough. We are told to social distance. We're told to wear a mask. We're told all of these things to help keep down COVID. Yet still, we do the opposite. We are out on the road all the time. We don't wear masks. We are partying. We're doing all sorts of stuff that goes against the grain of keeping COVID down. And it becomes out of selfishness that we have for our other. We must try and do things that will assist all of us. Not just ourselves. We can't be self-serving. And too often in life, people become self-serving in about their brother. And mind your brother's keeper, then show it. Show saying that I always say on Ball Talk, each one to each one. Nice. I don't have all the answers, but maybe I can learn something from you. I might not be as bright as you, but maybe you can teach me something and I can teach you something. So we have to get away from this selfishness and understand that we have to try and help each other. That's the only way we're going to make this world change.
My last question for you. You have been recognized by your own government for your patriotism and your work and your effort. And this entire interview has been enlightening for me because I've watched you from a distance. I know I got a true sense of your heart, of who Andrew Price is, and your care for your fellow Jamaicans and your country in general. What is next in terms of you living out the realities that are before you? You mentioned COVID, young people, the haves and the have-nots. But as a Jamaican, how we close this conversation today, as a Jamaican, what do you want, not just in general, but for Jamaica specifically? And that we, and we'll close out this interview this way.
I believe that people should be given opportunities. Once you give the Jamaican spirit an opportunity, you'll be surprised at what they can accomplish. We have a fixity of purpose. We have a sense of resiliency that is beyond none. All we need is just a little opportunity. And once we seize that opportunity, we can all be the best that we can be. And we have to do it with love. Love is the answer. One of my greatest mentors is Bob Marley. I know every single Bob Marley song because there's a message behind every Bob Marley song. And if somebody like Bob Marley from the third world can become such a worldwide trailblazer, why can't other individuals from this little island be trailblazers too? It's possible. And I believe that with opportunities, everything is possible. And this little island can produce some of the best musicians, some of the best sportsmen, some of the best politicians, some of the best ideologists, some of the best doctors, some of the best engineers. They're right here. All we have to do is give the youngsters an opportunity. Give them a chance. Give them a chance and they will surprise us all.
Well, Coach Price, that is a fitting way to close out this discussion. I'm so humbled that you joined me. Because when I look at what I see living in America, I grew up in Jamaica, obviously. I went to school on North Street downtown, where we take bus, and it was rough back then. And when I hear some of my colleagues talk about it now, there's this divide between the haves and the haves not. You mentioned Crossroad, going below Crossroad. I know people in Jamaica that's never been below Torrington Bridge. And to hear someone of your stature and caliber in the sporting realm in Jamaica just sharing with us your passion and your love for the least of these, to me, that's inspiration. And that's one of the reasons why I was hoping you'd join us on this call today. And I really appreciate your honesty, your candor, and your integrity. And I've been watching you from a distance ever since. When you were playing Manning Cup, I was playing Pepsi. And
used to Don't age me.
Don't age you. And when I used to go, when we heard Casey and Georges was playing, and Little John and the Zaidi brothers and Chipper Morgan and Skitto and all of these people, as a Casey person, I used to go and say, boy, this Georges team, yeah, serious. And we had Barrington Cummings and all these people, but it's something out for you guys, and just keep doing what you're doing, sir. People are taking,
you know, before you leave, Gerald, you know what, yeah, what I'd really like to say is that the amount of friends that you have met through football to this day that are still your friends, it's amazing.
Yes.
And for me, it's also amazing. I have friends that I didn't go to the same school with. To this day, I'm friends with them, and it is through football that we continue and maintain that friendship. So when Pele says that in his last game before he retired, that love is what we have.
Yes.
That's the real meaning of football. That's the real meaning of football. Because football gives you that opportunity to interact with so many different people from different cultures because of the love of this one round object.
Yes, true. So true.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true Arsenal fan.
London.
Well, Coach Price, thank you so much. I told you this time would run by really quickly. And thank you so much for joining me. And we will be in touch. And I'm sure once this episode airs, we will continue to hear people talking about this one, because on the same level that you're talking about the one with Edmund Moses or Otis Moss or Andrew Young, these interviews strike a nerve in people because they realize that individuals are out here doing great things, but they don't have to be on TV and be superstars. So thank you for that and joining me on this show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that you've just heard from Coach Andrew Price from Jamaica, a friend, a colleague, someone who has mentored and launched the careers of many. And as you heard today, a very grounded, humble, and well-intuned individual to what his purpose on life is all about. I trust that what was said here today inspires you, gives you another way to look at what you're experiencing. Because remember, it's easy, son. Life lessons on your journey to your purpose. So until next week, take care. And as Coach said, be safe.